Thank you for tuning in to the Given Rugby podcast. If this is your first time here, welcome. If this isn't your first time, then you know there are some people that we have to thank. First on the list, the Cover Podcast Network. They provide all of the production, all of the video, all of the editing that you see on YouTube, and all of the great audio that you hear on your preferred podcast app. We're also proudly brought to you by CardTrader.com. CardTrader is Australia's only online marketplace where you can buy and sell trading card games like Pokemon, Magic the Gathering, and also sports cards, NBA cards, NRL cards, AFL cards, NFL cards. They're all available at CardTrader.com. That's CardTrader.com. And if you sign up today, you will lock in a 3% sales commission. That means for the lifetime of your membership, of the time that you're signed up to Card Trader, you'll only pay a 3% sales commission on any card that you sell. Most other auction houses, most other platforms, marketplaces, some of the big ones, you're paying upwards of 12, 13, 14, 15, even as much as 20%. So sign up now. And finally, we are also brought to you by ASICS. Hit the link down below to buy anything you need, all things rugby, boots, apparel, sportswear, golf, they have it. Make sure you use our link because we get a nice little commission and that funds all of the stuff we like to do here. Okay, without further ado, on to the next guest.
Sorry. I forgot two really important things. To help the podcast grow, we really need your help. You can do this by following our social media channels. We're at Give'em Rugby on your preferred social media channel. We need subscribes to our YouTube channel. Again, we are at Give'em Rugby on YouTube. And finally, and probably most importantly, we need positive reviews on your preferred podcasting platform. The more positive reviews we get, the more the show will get recommended to other people around the world who like rugby. Don't forget to join the Give'em Rugby Club. You can do that at give'emrugby.com. It only costs $5 a month and it will give you access to a whole bunch of exclusive content, access to our guests, discounted merch, all that kind of thing. So please make sure you do that because that will ultimately fund this show long term and help us build out a bigger, better, broader production, more guests, better sound and all those kinds of things. So please make sure you join the Give'em Rugby Club. Okay, take two, I promise. Now we're on to the next guest. Look, in my line, I get ready. Feeling too trippy, get it cracking like a levy. I'ma show them all how to party with the levy. Keep the countdown and release the confetti. The party don't start till I get there. I sit a solid and the rest and it ain't fair. I've been waiting on this moment my whole life. Yeah, give me my crown. Back to the Give'em Rugby podcast. Today I'm sitting down with one of my favorite players of all time. I do say that about everyone, but today I really mean it. He's a Brumby. He's Wallaby number 947. He is Connell McInerney. How are you, my friend?
Thanks, mate. Thanks for the reminder.
Well, you don't know your Wallaby number.
Well, I would have to have a little bit of a think about it. So thanks.
Are you upset you didn't get, like, you weren't number 1,000? You were sort of 947. You're a, you know, 53 away from 1,000. Would that have been a nicer, easier number to remember?
Didn't really think about it. But yeah, would have. Yeah.
Well, look, you got one more cap than me, so congratulations, mate.
Thanks, mate. And I'm glad it was the two.
Yeah.
Because then I'd be in one of those stories about, like, the guys who play one cap and, like, you get it right up and that.
Yeah, like the Mark Bartholomew's comes to mind. I think he, obviously a Brumby for years, but he, I think his career was about 47 seconds with the Wallabies.
Right.
One cap, came off the bench. I think he might have even scored a try. So 100% success rate's pretty good. I think you're pretty close to that, aren't you?
50%.
Yeah. One try, two games. Off the back of a maul.
That's all right. Yeah. Always. They're always off the back of a maul.
But that story from Mark comes up all the time. You know, almost every lunch I go to, someone says, oh, Mark, you know, Mark Bartholomew is here.
There you go.
Yeah, shortest Wallabies career.
Quite a big name. I would have assumed he'd played a few.
He was incredible. Like, I mean, we're similar in age. So growing up watching that Brumbies team, he was unbelievable. Like in that back line with, you know, Roth and Gregan and Larkham. Like, he started lots of games, but he would also come in off the bench and he would just break games wide open. He was really incredible. So it is. I guess it's a real testament to that time.
That's what I was about to say.
In Australian rugby, when a guy like Mark Bartholomew's only gets one test.
So much quality back then.
Yeah, we just seemed to produce different quality. But look, I want to focus on you a little bit today. So I want to go right back to the beginning. What is the first memory you have playing footy or with a footy in your hand?
First memory that comes to mind is down at Curtin Oval.
Yep.
Mum brought me to the game. I think it was just me and Mum. And I think it was my first try.
Yeah, nice.
So I don't think it was my first game.
Yeah.
But there was no 100% success rate. I remember my mum just screaming as I'm just like... And for some reason, I must have had a bit of speed back then. Or compared to the other kids or whatever. I mean, probably a bit less quality for under six Royals.
Yeah.
But scoring a try down at Curtin Oval. Every time I drive past there, I remember that memory. That was probably one of my first memories, yeah.
It's funny, like, you know, you talk about the drive past the Oval thing. When I was a kid, my dad, every Oval we drove past, he'd be like, played there, scored a try there.
Yeah, right.
You know, and some of them were cool ovals, like Seaford Oval, obviously down in Queanbeyan. Yeah. He played a lot for the Blues, played a lot for the Raiders, not a lot, played a season for the Raiders. But then, you know, you drive past Concord Oval in Sydney, you know, played there, scored a try there, played a lot of shoot shield. So, you know, when I was a kid, I didn't really appreciate that. But now I think, you know, that's so cool. And I do it now too. Like every oval I drive past, I think, you know, I played a game there. Pretty ordinary, played poorly, but, still played there.
What was your first memory?
So I didn't start playing rugby until I was, I think, under eights, so seven. So I played soccer, I played basketball, and so originally I was going to play for Wests, because back in the day, Wests had just this huge junior club, like an incredible junior club. They used to do this thing where you would go down on a Friday night, so the dads would take all their kids down there, boys, girls, didn't matter, and like the first graders would run touch for the kids, so they'd break you up into sort of rough ages and you'd do that. And then all the dads would go over to what is now the Southern Cross Club, but it used to be the West Rugby Club, and just sink a couple of beers and come back. So, you know, there would be like Jamison Oval, like hundreds of kids running around playing touch. So originally I was going to play for Wests. Then something happened, and the club my dad played for had just rebranded to Gungahlin Eagles from the Darramullen All Boys Rugby Club. And as part of that, they were going to have a junior club. And dad was like, well, you're going to go to Darra. You know, he'd planned my life out already. You're going to go to Darra, so you might as well go play for Gungahlin. So I remember rocking up to a training session and there being like three kids there. Mm. And just like, so our coach was this guy named Leroy O'Sullivan. He's still involved.
Strong name.
Yeah, still involved out with Gungahlin. Still a really good guy. I catch up with him from time to time. And, you know, he played games with us or whatever. But I guess my first memory is really similar. So it was at Griffith Oval, which was home of the Brumbies for a long time, on the main, like the big field.
Yeah. Not well.
Yeah, we were playing, so under eights, across field. So, like, I think there was only 10 of us on the paddock. Mm. And I remember in the lead up to the game, I still wasn't sure, and our coaches weren't sure whether we were playing touch or tackle. So
good way to learn.
Yeah. So it was only in the warm up did we learn, oh, it's touch. Like under eights, you play touch, under nines, you tackle.
Yeah.
And similarly, I scored a try in that game, you know, like a little short ball. Like back in the day, I was pretty athletic. You know, I had a nice little change of direction, change of speed, threw a little hole and scored a try. And for me, that almost cemented, like, oh, this is proper fun. Like, I enjoyed basketball. and I enjoyed soccer, but there was just something about that moment of like, yeah, just seeing the defense, seeing the kind of C part and just adjusting my body to go through that gap.
It's pretty technical.
That, so, you know, that's what I reflect on now. I think about that now. At the time, you know, it's just like, yeah, this is cool. This is fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, that kind of set me on this path of what I'm doing now, you know, so from playing then straight into coaching and now trying to develop this sort of media product around rugby. I guess, you know, you talked about playing for Royals as a junior.
Yep.
Then you, because we played together at the Vikings.
Yep.
And I just want to ask you a little bit about that time. Like, you know, you were sort of in the under-20s setup. I assume you were training with the Brumbies, like at least doing preseason and that kind of thing at the time. I know that you came through with guys like Tyrell Lomax and Jordan Jackson Hope and that kind of thing. So there's, you know, there was obvious talent. You were all sort of at the same club. But I just wanted to ask you, there was like a pivotal moment, a conversation you had with, I think it was Dan McKellar, coming out of that 20s program, where you really, you made a really difficult decision. And I've been in a similar position. But I just wanted to ask you, like, when you had that, talk about that conversation first with Dan, where he sort of, I think he basically said you weren't ready for.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up because that's what I was thinking about.
Yeah,
I kind of knew we'd talk about that.
Yeah, yeah.
because, yeah, like I said, it was a pivotal moment.
Yeah.
So, like, usually after Aussie 20s, that's kind of when you get your contracts and stuff like that. And
I wouldn't know.
Missed out. Right? But so I was finished that 20s tournament. I remember I went in and like I don't like to use it as an excuse, but like my shoulder was buggered during that 20s World Cup. And so I went in a bit underdone and I think like the first time I did contact was the warm up before the game. Like And obviously, you know, as a young hooker, like I think I'd been playing hooker for 3 years, there was a lot of pressure on throwing and stuff.
Mm.
And I remember just being in my head about that and my shoulder's buggered. How am I going to throw? Like I'm pretty sure it was my right shoulder. That's where I get my power from.
Yeah, that's the power hand, yeah.
For a right-hander.
Yeah.
And anyway, I went into that tournament underdone and not very confident. Hadn't done contact, haven't thrown. So anyway, I didn't have a great tournament, basically. And that first game, because like I was named to start against Samoa and pretty much butchered it.
Mm.
Like missed 50% of my lineouts, you know, and missed tackles and stuff like that. So I ended up having like not a great tournament. I started coming good towards the end after like in that fifth week. I didn't have a good tournament then. And so when I came back, you know, everything I mucked up a bit as well.
Yeah,
I mucked up a bit over there, and you know, probably got on the piss too much and stuff like that. I don't know if that was a coping mechanism at the time because I wasn't playing well. But anyway,
I mean, you know, I guess you allude to something that's, I guess it's a for better or for worse, it's like a tried and true. Almost like a rite of passage going on a rugby tour, playing up a little bit.
Yeah,
it's
that's
just
right.
The difference is the stakes are are significantly higher when you're representing your country.
Exactly. Yeah. And I got some good stories there if you want to go back to them, but, which I haven't spoken about much. But anyway, I came back. You know, everything was up in the air. But I was thinking, you know, I might still, you know, local guy, I might still be offered something. And at the time, Tyrell and I, we were kind of expecting to go back and be put on a development contract, which wasn't much. It was a few bones, but like it would have just
gets you in the environment. It puts some cash in your pocket, and for a guy who going to uni or whatever, that's your part time job. You know, it's a bigger commitment. Obviously,
it's a foot in the door.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Anyway, and I just remember having a meeting with Dan McKellar at the time, and you know, and I wasn't, yeah, I didn't have a good feeling. Anyway, I went up, and so this was probably, you know, we would have had a few weeks off after the tournament, and it would have been during that sort of NRC period.
Yeah.
When NRC was a thing.
Sort of September, October period.
That feels like a throwback, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, we haven't had it for 2019, I think, was the last season, right?
Yeah, that's right.
It's crazy. It's crazy it's been that long.
Yeah.
Because, like, I played in that in 2015. That's almost 10 years ago.
There's your jersey's up there. Yeah. No, I remember that.
Yeah.
I do remember.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, yeah, had a meeting with Dan. And, so you talk about pivotal moments, walking in there, sitting down, and just straight away he just rips into me.
His style, though. Shouldn't say that's his style. He is incredible at giving you what you need in the moment.
Yeah. So and like, I didn't appreciate it at the time. But years later, and it taught me so many lessons, right?
Mm.
Not to take anything for granted. Anyway, I go back to the conversation. He sits me down and he just goes, mate, I'm not going to offer you a development contract. He goes, I don't think you're ready. He goes, look at the spare tire you're carrying around. Pretty much called me, you know.
Yeah.
Fat.
Yeah.
A fat C word. And he's like, he's just like, mate, you're fat. You need to get rid of that. You know, why are you carrying that around, blah, 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 you know. And he's like.
Yeah, and his growl.
And I just went, like, at the time, like, and I wish I kind of just asked for a chance. But at the time I didn't because, one, you know, I was pretty over rugby, having a shit tournament in the 20s. You know, not having a good time, coming back, kind of feeling empty. And I struggled in that tournament. Like every night I'd be struggling. Like I'm not playing well. My shoulder's still buggered. I'm over rugby. Because it was such a big, drawn-out year, you know.
And
so much commitment for a young fella.
I was just going to say, for someone so young, 18, 19, you know, you come through schoolboy footy where you play, I don't know, you maybe play 12 games.
Yep.
Something like that. And then in there somewhere there's sort of the three or four games you play for your state if you make that, and then maybe an end of year tour, or you know, you play your two games for Australian schools or three games for Australian schools if you get there. So you're talking about a season that's maybe 18 to 20 games long. You know, all of a sudden you go into...
It's the most footy I've ever played
in
those years, from 18 to 20.
And like, you know, especially for a front rower, so you go from doing that where you can only push the scrum a metre and a half and, you know, the scrum's really controlled.
I forgot about that.
But, you know, everything's kind of controlled, right? You know, there's no crutch binding, everything's, you know, so the impact on your body as a front rower is significantly less. Then you go into, you know... Most guys go into Colts, but you had some exposure into first grade and into second grade. So you're playing a full game of Colts, then you're maybe getting a half or 20 minutes in first grade. Then in the middle of the year, when you're kind of finally getting your legs, you go off and you play that World Cup, which is it's probably not quite as physical as first grade might be because you're all kind of the same age. But I watch it. It's so quick. Like, you have to make decisions like that. Then you kind of come back. You come back into club rugby and then you go into an NRC season. So, like, you know, I remember thinking, reflecting back then on, you know, the guys coming in and out, because there was a few of you at the Vikings coming in and out with the 20 stuff. Like, these guys are playing, like, 40 games or involved in 40 or 50 games. Like, it's an incredible amount of wear and tear. And then, you know, if you're saying you're carrying an injury too, it's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're 100% right. So back to, Dan. So basically he was also, like you said before, like he was talking about that I need to be playing first grade.
Yeah.
And stuff. And at the time, our good friend, Michael Henry, was at Vikings, and he was...
He'll be so chuffed that you mentioned him.
We'll have to tag him in the thing. Yeah. He was keeping a couple of the boys out, and he'd play 80 minutes, and like he was like in the prime of his life. Because he would have been around that 26, 27 mark.
Probably. I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was for a guy, he was unbelievable. You know, he didn't do a lot of off-season training, didn't lift a lot of weights.
He was built like a banker.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. Yeah, but he just had this incredible motor.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
He would just go and go and go. Really, really strong line-out throw.
Yeah.
You know, and Hooker, we'll talk about it later, but, you know, I think Hooker's one of the toughest positions on the field because it's got so many technical aspects as That's well right. as the footy aspects.
That's right. And I was still trying to expertise that, you know.
Yeah.
And I wasn't quite ready. Well, I wasn't ready enough to take Chick's position, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And
club captain. I don't know what he got up to with Brad Harris, but there would have been a bit of stuff going on behind the sheds on a Thursday night. No. But anyway, he's a legend. And, like, and he never showed any ego around me or anything, you know. He kind of would give off the energy that, you know, I'm only here for a year or two more and then, you know, you'll go on. So whether I could have been patient then, but I think in the end it was probably the best decision I made. And I'm not, you know, like I still really appreciate what Vikings did for me back then, you know. And I hold nothing bad against the club. But yeah, just lucky there was a position at Royals at the time to play first grade. And I was still pretty down, right, after being shunted from Dan and stuff. Mm. At the time, you know, like I was kind of held a bit of a grudge. And, all right, stuff it. Like I'll go to Royals, set up a meeting with Wayne Southwell, who's a great man. And, yep. Yeah, ended up playing a season there. First grade, played every game.
Won a premiership too, right?
Not that year. That year we lost the semi-final.
Yep.
So that was 2016.
16, yep.
And Vikings won it, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
Vikings won the final.
Yes. Tyrell Lomax kept me off the field that year, so.
Shout out
to you, Tyrell.
Yeah. He did, right? He did. But then it was 2017 when we went undefeated. And won, so that was pretty special. And we beat the Vikings.
Yes.
So it was kind of like, you know, a bit of payback at the time. But it was nothing really like that.
But so from me, and at that time it happened, it's 2016. So I made a similar decision about a year before you did, or roughly. I was playing for another club, and I felt there. And I don't want to speak badly about them because they're the current premiers and they really strong club now, got an awesome coach, really good setup, really good academy. But I was the club captain. I had a difference of opinion around how you recruit and how you build a sustainably successful club.
Like through your juniors and your colts and stuff.
Yeah, correct. So I had a really different opinion about how we go about doing that. That was my view. The club shared a different view, which was more of a Rugby Australia top-down approach. And I also felt like I wasn't the kind of guy at that stage. It happened later in my footy career, too late, to be honest with you. But I wasn't the kind of guy who was going to lift on my own, do my own running and do my own conditioning, you know, do my own extras, do film work and that kind of stuff. I wasn't doing that on my own. So I needed an environment that was structured. I needed an environment that was more professional than the one that was offered to me. So we were in completely different mindsets. I'm trying to put myself in an environment that I think I can be successful in. You know, you're trying to get the opportunity that you need to make the leap. But the goal is the same, right? Like we're both trying to get better. So I remember at the time, there was a lot of chatter, like can't believe this, you know, he should be trying to, you know, knock Chick off the perch and all of this kind of thing. And I'm just sort of sitting there like, I can't say shit. Like I admire someone who's like, no, my goal is to get here. I'm gonna do this thing that I think is right for me, and I'm just gonna go for it. Mm. And, you know, watching you, what, you know, 2016 you played the full year, but that year in 2017 where you guys just wiped the floor with the competition, and you were a huge part of that. You know, as a young front rower, like it was tough to be involved on the other side of it, but also looking at it, going, yeah, like, you know, he made this decision, and it's paid off for him. Like, it's paid off big time. He's, you know, one of the top players now locally, and, you know, looking like he's going to get an opportunity in the NRC and then hopefully the Brumbies. But, you know, I want to go back to a comment you made, you know, around that sort of under 20 setup. That's the time when you get offered the contract, or typically the time when you get offered the contract. I feel like that's make or break for so many guys, because there's either the guys who get offered the contract and the guys who don't. And then the guys who don't have two options. One is to sulk or, you know, flounder in club footy, and the other is to go, okay, well, I'm going to prove everyone wrong. And that's exactly what you did.
Yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, at the time I kind of, yeah, like I toured away in clubland for a while, for a few years. But, like, I always, like, unlike you, how you needed that structured environment, you know, to train and stuff. Like, I still trained really hard by myself.
That's why you've got the Wallaby cap and I'm sitting here on the couch interviewing you.
No, well, there's different ways you can go about it. There's different ways you can go about it. But I remember, I kept putting work in just in case, you know, like in case that opportunity. Like, I never wanted to be underdone if something actually came up. And I guess, like, Dan kind of telling me I'm fat sort of probably put me on a... I mean, yeah, like, I could have sulked and got fatter.
Yeah, you could have slid over and over to the number 3 jersey.
Which I did later. I waited 5 years, stayed in good nick, and then the last couple of years I've gotten fatter. But I trained the house down and stayed ready. But it wasn't only just to be in case I got picked. It was to play well for Royals.
Yeah.
Like, everything I did was so I could play well. And have no excuses, you know, and kind of go into every game knowing that I've done a bit more than the average first grade player in Canberra. So, and I don't know why. I think, like, that got trained into me when I was young, when I was around 16.
Yeah.
Just those habits. And plus, I probably had a bit more time because I never went and got a full-time job after that, which I've seen a couple blokes do when they don't get offered the contract. And then all of a sudden they put all their energy into their work. Like, I was doing part-time uni and I was actually still working at Vikings.
Right? Oh, wow. Yeah,
so,
okay. Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was still taking their money. I was only, like, I had the time to still train. And that was important to me. So I guess, in a roundabout way, that's kind of probably how I just stayed ready to go, I guess.
And I think that's... You know, one of the things I'm lucky in that what I do for work now, I'm around lots of people who've had success in lots of different industries, lots of different endeavors. And the thing you just touched on, you know, there'll be 1% better. Keep ready just in case. That's something they all kind of talk about, in that, you know, while they were toiling away at their job or whatever, they had books that they were reading. Or they were taking classes, or they had a mentor, or they were making time, you know, to mentor someone else, or they were volunteering. So there were all these little nudges towards success, towards the things that they wanted to achieve. And for someone on the, you know, for people on the outside looking in, it's like, oh, look at that. Like, that's just happened. That seems to have happened out of nowhere. But, you know, there's this real long... Sometimes, you know, sometimes you toil away for a really long time before you get the thing you want. And, you know, some people don't get the thing they want, but there's this real, real commitment to the craft.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that what you just touched on, I didn't have that. I certainly didn't have that drive as an athlete. But as a coach and as someone now trying to forge another career, that's something that I've taken from those people. I'm like, well, you know, I could sit here and watch Netflix, or I could, you know, turn the PlayStation on and do that. But maybe I'll read a chapter in this book, or I'll sit down and I'll write, you know, write something on my laptop just to keep those cogs turning.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's very important.
And I think you've clearly kind of embodied that. And it's
I mean, you would I wouldn't say embodied. I mean, see, the thing is, like, whoever's watching, whoever will watch this,
yep,
they're probably going, what do you mean you train the house down? Like, but, like, I was never, like, athletically gifted. Like, I'm still one of the slowest guys in the team, you know, like, and, like, I had hand-eye coordination, always had that, but, like, I feel like I had to work just to get to, like, where I am now. And, yeah, like, I'm not the most powerful guy or whatever, but, like, I feel like those habits when I was younger have, like, just allowed me to kind of keep up with the game. Yeah. Or, like, the demands or kind of, yeah, like, definitely not, no means athletically gifted. Like, I mean, running-wise, like, I'm kind of naturally fit, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Like, everything else, like, I've had to work for. Just to get this, and like I look like a third, like fourth grader, you know. Like,
I wouldn't say that. But so were you one of those guys growing up who was in every rep team, or did that kind of happen later? As
you know, what's funny, and not many people know this, but in year 9 when I was 15, I didn't even make the St. Mary MacKillop college rugby team.
Yeah, wow.
But I still think, like, maybe they just, like, forgot me. Like, because I was playing, like, I played Brums under 13s, under 14s, 15s, 16s, all the way through 18s, 20s. But for some reason, I didn't make my school team, and we're not even a rugby team. Like, we're not like your Darren Marlin and Eddies.
I was just
this
about
was,
to say,
this
yeah.
was for a one-off comp.
Yeah.
And, like, I shouldn't have even played, you know, because I thought I was up here. I was in the highest I could be at the time outside of school, and then I didn't make it. And I remember going to the teacher, knocking on his door and going, mate, like, did you forget me? What's the go? Like, and it wasn't an arrogant thing. It was honestly, like, genuine, like, did you just, like, forget? Like, I tried out and everything. Mm. It wasn't even that I just threw my name in. Like, I trialed and didn't make it. Like, I couldn't believe it. And I was, so, yeah, so it's funny. So that's the only team. I also tried out for under 16s Raiders rugby
yep.
league.
Yep.
Because I was playing a bit of league from 13 through to 16. I didn't make that either. So, yeah, that was a bit of an ego hit because, like, I thought I was good enough to play that. But then again, like, I'm not built like a league. Like, I wasn't fast enough and stuff. And maybe they saw that back then. So, yeah, I didn't. So there was a couple teams I didn't make. But in general, like, the Brumbies underage stuff, yeah, kind of went through from 13s through to 20s.
Yeah, okay. It's interesting. I had a similar moment. So I went from Darren Marlin College here. In year 10, I went to St. Joseph's College in Hunters Hill.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you start of the year. So we got there, sort of, you get there February or whenever school starts. And so you're sort of halfway through the summer sports season. So I played cricket because, you know, whatever.
Well, a lot of rugby guys do during yeah. summer, right?
Yeah.
It's off season.
Low impact sport. You know, rugby.
I wish I played. Like, I wish I played. I love cricket.
Yeah.
I love
cricket. It's a great sport. I still love it. Hopefully my son will pick it up. He loves to smack stuff with a bat. So hopefully, you know, hopefully he goes down that path. But so did that. And then rugby trials at that time started. So you could do athletics sort of as your pre-season for rugby, or you just go straight into rugby trials. And, you know, old school, like, everyone at Joey's played rugby or soccer or cross country. Golf was the other one. So there were four.
Golfers.
Yeah, there were four winter sports.
Rich boys.
Yeah.
Like, golf at that age.
Yeah. So there were four. Well, I mean, golf was the joke, like.
Right, okay.
Cause it,
all the nerds played
it, back well, then. Not even. It was just like, I don't want to play a winter sport. I'm gonna go play golf.
Okay.
Like, but so there were, those were your four options. You had to play a summer and a winter sport. That was a non-negotiable at Joey's. So everyone, you know, everyone played rugby. There are a couple of soccer teams, like age group soccer teams, and then maybe like 10 guys. If you say you're going to do something, go and do it. So, you know, he's had such a big impact on me as an adult, and he probably doesn't even realize. He probably had that conversation with with so many, or similar conversations with so many other kids, you know. But he's an educator, and he gave me what I needed in that moment.
Yeah, very similar. Like with Dan, like that's probably what I needed. Mm. I mean, not to say I hadn't faced adversity or whatever. You know, I didn't have the perfect upbringing, whatever, and I was a little shit as well. But but yeah, so yeah, obviously toiled away with Royals for a few years, and then got to the stage. I just thought, you know, there's not much doing here. And then got an opportunity to play for East in Sydney.
Yep.
And then yeah, it was funny. It was like because I went away to Sydney. I played for the Country Eagles and stuff, and that was good fun. And then
was Pete Playford your coach? Was he involved?
Yeah, no, he was. Yeah. He was involved.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was like our invited skills coach. Decorated. Very decorated. Yeah.
He coached.
He was Stars, wasn't he?
He coached us at the Stars, and he's another guy who's left an imprint on me. And he's actually shaped some of the way that I approach management and coaching, just from some of the things he did as a coach. You got to remember too, like when in 2015, when he took over, and I can't remember who the coach was before him, but when he took over at the Stars, they'd finished second last in 2014 in the NRC the year before. Mm. And they had a good team. They had guys like Paddy Ryan, they had guys like Chipper Hansen, Tom Carter was playing in the centres, Jake Gordon playing halfback, young Jake Gordon playing halfback. Tom Kingston playing fullback, like he'd come out of the Sevens set up and had played a lot for the Tars. So they had this quite talented team, but whoever the previous coach was just couldn't work it out. Mm. Peake sort of came in and he inherited a lot of those guys, but then he brought in some other guys and he reached out to a few coaches in Canberra and brought a bunch of us up. So Senio Taliafoa, I think he's played for Samoa now.
He spent a little bit of time with Rumps.
Yeah, yeah. He
did a couple off seasons.
Yeah, he was one. Andrew Robinson, who's a stalwart here in Canberra now, with a ton of first grade games. He was another. And then I got the call up sort of halfway through the year. But I won't tell you what he said in this meeting, but basically he took this side and we came in fourth, but we had two huge losses. We had one huge loss to the Canberra Vikings, which you might have played in, or I'm not sure, but
yeah, that was at Viking Park.
Yeah, it was like 70-0.
70, yeah.
Yeah. So I got the call up to the side the week after that.
Yeah.
Tom Robinson.
And damage control.
Yeah. Well, Tom Robinson did his shoulder in that
game.
That's
right.
Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah. Like it's like a blur, and then you're saying stuff, and I'm like,
oh, I remember that. Yeah. So I got the call after that game, and then the following game. So I sort of did that week of training. Pete was good with me. He was like, "Mate, you're not going to play this week, but we've got a second grade." You know, you remember they used to have those sort of one-off like development team games. So he's like, "You're playing that game. I'll make sure I'll get there early and I'll watch." So we played. I played in that game. Played okay, but we played Brisbane City. And they pumped us like 50 to 15 or something. So then I think I played the next two games, and in the lead up to the semi final, he gave us an option. He said, "Do you want to fly in on the Friday night? The game was Saturday. Do you want to fly in on the Friday night, play Saturday, come home Saturday night, or do you want to fly in Saturday morning, play the game, fly home Sunday?" So the boys obviously want to fly home Sunday, right?
Yeah, big opportunity, yeah.
But we're playing Brisbane City.
Big opportunity after the game.
Yeah, exactly. But we're playing Brisbane City, who pumped us like two weeks before. And he sort of brings us in this room, and he had a bunch of these plain white T-shirts, like just white T-shirts from Kmart. And he was like, "I want you to write a word on these T-shirts. You know, whatever this team means to you, or whatever this, you know, this opportunity means for you, I want you to write a word." And so everyone sort of went around, you know, some guys got like Tolu Latu got pretty fancy with his, he like made a necklace and whatever, like, so everyone's writing on these T-shirts. And then he sort of launches into this really where he made himself really vulnerable. He shared some stuff that I don't know that he's shared with anyone ever before or since, but he really like was so inspiring. Like it was the first time I'd really had this, I don't know, I felt like a really strong connection to a coach on a personal level. And, you know, we go into that game and we're warming up in these fucking plain white.
I think I remember. But at the time we just thought, geez, they're really struggling.
Well, you know,
whatever video they had on the stream or whatever, it just looked like...
Yeah, I think it was on Fox
really
Sports.
You couldn't really tell
there
was like writing and stuff.
Yeah.
Because of the lighting.
Yeah, but and you know, like I guess it was for us. And then after the warm-up, he sort of brings us in and he's like, all right, we're gonna line up on halfway. We're going to run out before they do. Like we're going to run out early and we're going to line up on halfway in a line like you do in school and we're gonna shake everyone's hand, like you do in school. And I was like, it's different, but you know, whatever. Like at that point, I was like, I'm just happy to be here, and win or lose, I'm gonna have a good time tonight.
Yeah.
So I have this vision seared into my brain of Ben Hine and Liam Gill running out of the tunnel, and seeing us standing there at halfway, like with our hands out and just this perplexed, completely perplexed look on their face.
They just got set up for the kick
receipt. No, so Liam, to his credit, was like, oh shit, all right. And he brought, because I think he was the captain, he brought the team out and they like shook everyone's hands. There were a couple of guys who sort of shot off at the back and took off. And for like 60 minutes in that game, it looked like we might actually get over the line. I think it was like 35-25 with, you know, 16 minutes to go or whatever. And then they scored two quick tries and it was over. But Pete had, I'm sorry to derail you, but he just had this really big impact on me purely because he was happy to be vulnerable in front of a room full of guys. And, you know, at that time I hadn't really experienced that. Like I'd come through an all boys school where it's like boys, like so to see someone who had achieved a lot in his footy career and was sort of transitioning into this coaching business career. At the time he was selling sunglasses, but you know, to see a guy like that be really vulnerable with us was really cool.
Well, so it makes you want to play for him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. If he called me today, like I've been retired for 5 years, but if he called me today and was like, coaching a team, I want you to play, I'd seriously think about it.
Yeah, no, it's cool. Because all of a sudden, like, because a lot of the time growing up with the coaches, like, you kind of think they know better than you and they're kind of up here. And then they show that vulnerability that they're human. And then all of a sudden you can relate to that.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're going, geez, this guy's all right. Mm. And like he's literally dropped his ego or his coaching ego, taking his coaching hat off, and like now he's just one of the boys.
Mm.
And all of a sudden you're like, yeah, he's all right. Like
I'll ride with this guy.
Yeah, exactly. So no, it's cool. Yeah. But back to Dan, like he just gave me a call out of nowhere. And it was before our first trial game against Warringah.
Yep.
And he's like, mate, can you come down and train with us or whatever? Like, I don't know if at the time there was a hooker down or not. There must have been. It was 2018.
Okay.
Yeah.
Trying to think. So you probably had like...
That's where...
You probably had like Josh Manray was probably there.
Yeah, Robbie Abel.
Robbie Abel. Chris Alcock, maybe.
Yeah, well, he was a back rower.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It was Bongo, Robbie Abel, and I can't remember.
Anyway, but
which is stupid because I'm pretty sure I'm forgetting.
Oh, Folau, right? Folau.
Yeah. Who ended up being the starter later because those two guys got injured.
Yeah,
it was Folau.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Bongo was like the starter that year and then he got injured. But anyway, so I went down. He's like, oh, we want you to have a trial with us or whatever. And then I didn't tell the East coach because I was like, oh, you know, like, well, because I was playing that game. And I was I played I'm pretty sure I played 80 that game or 70 or something.
Yeah.
And I didn't want him, I don't know, I wanted to get through the game for him and not have him thinking, oh, crap, now I can only play him 40 or, you know, or I'll bring him off the bench, keep him fresh for the Brums game or, I don't know. I just went, oh, I'll tell him after the game. So then I played. Luckily, I didn't get injured because I was thinking, shit, like, and it was a big deal back then to even play a trial game for Brums, you know. So then I came back and played the trial game and went pretty well. And then remember the, like, the Brisbane Tens?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a throwback too.
That's a massive
That was a good tournament.
Yeah. That was good fun.
Yeah.
So I played anyway and then played that, went all right there.
Yeah.
And then went back to East. Didn't really hear from Brums after that, but I knew I did what I could.
Mm.
And then Bongo got injured one game and I was watching in Sydney at a pub. And then I get a call. I still wasn't sure. I'm just thinking, you know, that he might get another hooker or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, he gave me the call the next day and he's like, mate. I remember a few days before they were worried because I think maybe Robbie had soft tissue injury going on. And Dan asked if I could come down and train for like $200 a week.
Yep.
And because I felt like I didn't want to be taken advantage of. And by that age, I could actually think for myself rather than just go, oh, yeah, no worries. I'll do whatever for anyone, you know. And I was like, you know, I was earning like I was working full time for Ford.
Yeah.
Delivering cars. And it was a great gig. And I was getting it was the first time I was getting paid decent money.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, that's, a drawback to what you were saying before. You know, guys don't get the contract, they get a full-time job. Money is addictive too.
That's right.
When you see that paycheck hit your account, you're like, oh, and I can buy some stuff now.
And I finally had bills. Like, I was paying rent there, you know. And anyway, so I just said, mate, like, I can't do that for $200. Like, that's just fuel, you know?
Yeah, coming back and forth.
I can stat mums or whatever, but I'm like, I actually have bills, you know, now or whatever. And I said, like, sorry, mate. And he didn't reply to me. And I was just like, well, like, he's got to understand, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because that's like, I'm almost 23. Like, it's not like I'm 18, you know, when you can get away and living in Canberra.
Living at home, yeah. Yeah.
Because I couldn't have lived at home because I would have had to come back to Sydney anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so I said no. And then a couple of days later, they played and I watched and Bongo got injured. And then the next day, he rang me back and he's like, okay, mate, like, because Bongo, I think he did his ACL.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he had a couple of those in a row.
Yeah.
If I remember, he sort of got back from one and did it.
Yeah. So anyway, so he's like, mate, I could put you on an injury contract for 6 weeks. You know, it'll be this much. I think it was $700 or $800 a week, which was a lot better. And he's like, this should help with your finances, whatever, like, you little prick.
Yeah. So, yeah, he read that message.
But if I had said yes to the $200, then I would have just still been on that.
Yeah, you would have, 100%. And I know.
I don't think they would have put me on like
I know. I know of guys who've agreed to that.
Yeah.
And then.
They're around, so that's kind of it.
I know a couple of guys who had like they had managers and the manager was like, yeah, take the 200, but make sure they give you like a matchy, $1,000 for a game or whatever.
Yeah.
So I know a few guys that happened to, so that was okay. But yeah, I know guys who agreed to come in as an injury cover, but for the the minimum, whatever the pay minimum nuts. Is, you know, it's like $170 after tax or something.
Yeah. Like, it's crazy that's even allowed. But love of the game, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Anyway, so then that's kind of when my whole world just, you know, took a turn for the best. Mm. And then I was kind of, that year I kind of played at East, trained till Thursday. With Brums, and then I'd go and play for Easts, and it was like one of the best years of my life because it's a split life, right? Because I'm having half my week in Sydney, half my week in Canberra, and it was awesome.
Yeah, well, you're getting your cake and eating it too, right? Like, you know, your hometown team, Brumbies,
yeah,
you're getting that exposure, and then on the weekends you're living it up in the eastern suburbs of Sydney. Like,
and and I was on match, played six games that year for Brahms.
Yep.
It was from about halfway through the season onwards. So yeah, then the matches start coming in and everything's going pretty well. And then that's when I signed 2 years.
Yep.
And it was a wider training the next year. So I was still on matches and I played 10 games on matches, which is pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. And they were $2,000 back then.
Yep.
So I'm assuming they've gone up since. it was pretty good. So.
Inflation's killer.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so that's kind of, yeah. So like my point was that, you know, Dan told me to go and lose my belly and go and play footy, play first grade, blah, 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 for 3 years. And then he called me back. And then when I came back, he goes, like, mate, you're in good nick. Like, he goes, this is why, like, I couldn't choose you back then. I didn't think you were ready. And that's when I went, you know what? Like, I probably wasn't ready. Like, I wasn't ready. And that's the best thing. I mean, financially for the next few years, you know, like, I was living week to week. But it was still the best lesson, you know, not to take things for granted. And then all of a sudden, like, I come back, like, it's gotten a new man.
Yeah.
You know?
But it sounds too like, you know, you say that was the best year of your life. You were enjoying your footy.
Yeah.
But enjoying, you know, the lifestyle you were living too.
Yeah, yeah. And East is such a good club for that. Like, it's the best. I'd go back there in a heartbeat and play if I could.
I know lots of guys who are involved there, you know, from all over Australia, played all kinds of different clubs around the world, and I have no affiliation to them, but everyone who I know who's been there, who's been involved, who's played there or had an affiliation loves it.
Yeah.
Just raves about it.
Yeah.
No, and you know,
I mean, you're in one of the best spots in the world, right? In the eastern suburbs, you know?
And
there's a lot going on.
I went up there 1 year for East Ladies Day.
Yeah.
And I was used to Vikings Ladies Day where it's, you know, the
couple bottles of wine.
Yeah, a couple of bottles of wine and, you know, everyone's mum comes down and and
it's all spread out.
Yeah, and it's
still good.
It's good. Yeah. Like you hang and you get to meet a lot of your teammates, partners or sisters or mothers and stuff. Nice, right? Yeah, it's nice.
Sun's usually out, like
it's
a nice time of year.
It's usually front end of the year because it gets too cold in July.
Yeah.
Then I go up to Easts, go up to Woollahra Oval, number one. It was the year that they put down the synthetic. And I sort of
It would have been the first year I played there.
Yeah, I think
2018.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I roll into the clubhouse at like, I don't know, like 2 o'clock. And the line for the bar is like 20 deep.
Yeah.
There are women everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's just like the biggest party.
Yeah,
like just this huge day. Yeah. There's
a couple bars around the field as well.
Yeah,
just chockers.
I'd just never seen anything like it.
Yeah,
and then I'm thinking like, you know, because I had at that time I was working in rugby, trying to run a high performance program. And I was like, God, imagine how much money they're making off this. Like they're charging at the door for starters. Like you got to buy a ticket.
Yeah.
Then they're
scored up in recent times. Yeah.
Then you got your bar takings. Like I was just, it was incredible. And as you say, it's a pretty impressive setup. Yeah,
it's a great setup. Yeah, the bars, very close to the field.
Yeah,
yeah, and they have a DJ on later on, so they keep people around. You know, like I think the DJ starts at 9 or 10 o'clock. Like, massive party. It's good fun.
So look, I'm conscious that you got other stuff to do today. So I want to ask you about.
I don't really. I don't plan much on my day off.
Which is why we appreciate you coming. I've been
looking
in.
Forward to this for weeks, man. They gave me a bit of purpose.
I want to ask you, you know, you talked about you toiled away in club footy, then you toil away in super footy and kind of cement yourself as a vet, you know, as someone who's reliable with the Brums. Then you get a call from Dave Rennie. First, I want to ask you about the first phone call you get from Dave Rennie. What was that like to get? To get the Wallabies coach calling your phone.
Yeah, because I was in pre-season at the time and I had no idea I'd be considered at all. But I didn't get a call. I got added to a WhatsApp group. And then I'm going, what's this? And then I just didn't read into it because I was This is either an accident or like, I don't know. Because like I got added into this group and I saw a few familiar numbers and whatever. But there was no messages yet, like for ages. And then like I reckon that for like a day or two, like that was it.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. And like told the missus and that, like, oh yeah, like, I don't know what this is, but whatever. Yeah, and then, yeah, no, Dave called me, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I was pretty nervous and stuff on the phone, but, yeah, it's pretty cool. I guess just from being thinking, like, you're not being considered at all, you know. And then, yeah. Well, because Noss at the time, Lockie Lonigan, like, because he played in the games before that. So this was for the spring tour.
Yeah.
So I assumed he'd
carry on.
He'd carry on, but they obviously saw him as a long-term prospect and me as a battler who could probably just do a job. But for him, they wanted him to have a pre-season and like develop a bit more, you know, put a bit of weight on and all that. And then maybe, yeah, and then, yeah, I guess as you said, like maybe because I was reliable, that's why they kind of threw me a bone. But yeah, yeah. So yeah, it was pretty cool to go on that tour.
And then, you know, you get, I assume you went into a team room, you know, after some weeks of training and, you know, where they announced the team and your name gets announced. What was that like?
Yeah, it was pretty emotional. Yeah. Yeah, I guess like, because I'm one of those guys, yeah, you know, like at the time, everything's a surprise and like, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but
just weren't expecting.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like, wasn't expecting it, and also like, I'm one of those guys who like, I never saw like the Wallabies as like achievable.
Yeah,
and I'm not even just saying that to try and be humble. Like, I just honestly didn't think that it was achievable because, I guess maybe growing up in that age where the Wallabies were like the champions of the world, like, and then you know. And then later on, I guess I still had that, like that. I don't know how to say it, but I guess like maybe guys coming through now might see the quality of the Wallabies at the moment and kind of expect that they could play for them. Whereas like back then, I still saw the Wallabies as kind of what they were.
Mm.
So I don't know what I'm trying to say, but
yeah, well, you had them up on this pedestal.
Yeah, yeah, and exactly.
And
that's from all our memories from growing up and
yeah.
watching them and like yeah. they were genuine superstars.
Well, and to me, you know, like George Gregan was kind of a transcendent athlete.
Yeah.
Like, you know, even if you didn't follow rugby, you kind of knew who he was.
Exactly. Well, most people knew like
who the Wallabies were.
Yeah, yeah, like they were in Weet-Bix ads.
Yeah, you know? That's true. Yeah, how many do you do?
How many do you do? Yeah. So anyway, and then I guess like I still had that feeling for them.
Yeah.
So it was pretty emotional, you know, even to get a game.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I guess you just reflect on your journey and stuff and you just like, you know, it's pretty cool. Yeah. Mm. And there's like still players around there, you know, like, James Slipper and, you know, James O'Connor, Quade Cooper, like, you know, they're all in that group.
Mm.
So you kind of, yeah, it kind of has a feeling of like the Wallabies of old sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, gotcha. Yeah, no, it was cool, mate. Yeah, it's all a bit of a blur, you know.
Well, I think it's one of those things and I think lots of people, this happens to lots of people in lots of endeavours, they achieve something and because it moves so quickly, you don't really get the opportunity to enjoy it and reflect on it at the time because you're like, well, I've got to do the job.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's only in hindsight, in retrospect, where you go, wow, like this is what it meant to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, and I knew that, I mean, like, because like I'm, yeah, I knew it was probably going to be, you know, every game was a bonus.
Yeah,
and then I play that second game against Scotland. And I'm like, this is epic, you know. Like, just to play two in a row,
it's cool.
Know?
Yeah,
yeah. And I kind of knew in the back of my head, like, I'd have to, you know, do something pretty special to be there again.
Yeah,
you know? And I haven't been since, you know.
Yeah,
and you know, injuries and confidence and stuff like that have played a part.
Mm.
But yeah, it'd be good to string a few games together, but I guess that's footy, eh?
Right, it is, and there's a big season ahead. You know, you sort of alluded to Lockie before, but you've also got Billy Pollard there. Mm. You know, two guys who clearly the Wallabies regard pretty highly in the two jersey.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, right. You know, and I love how humble and the humility you're showing here. It comes off as really authentic. It doesn't come up.
I'm just realistic.
Yeah. I'm realistic. Yeah, sure. You know?
But I always have been realistic about everything. Like,
but, you know, it doesn't diminish what you've achieved, and you've really become a, from my perspective, you've become a real, maybe not a, your master's maybe the wrong word, but you've developed your craft. You continue to develop your craft. You know, even the way you came in and we were talking off air, you know, you really seem to enjoy footy. So I'm gonna finish on this question. What is it about rugby that you love, and what is it about it that made you want to go down this path?
Yeah, with the path thing, like, I guess I wasn't really good at much else. No, honestly, like, as I said before, like, I've always had to kind of try work hard just to stay, not ahead of the game, just to stay at that level. But, yeah, you know, at the time, you know, probably allude to my upbringing a bit, like, there wasn't much opportunity elsewhere, you know, as a young fella. So I kind of could have gone one way or the other. And because I had something to focus on, and, you know, I wasn't good at studying, I wasn't good at school, I was a little shit. Yeah, like, if it wasn't rugby, then who knows where I'd be, you know? Like, yeah. I'd probably be, like, struggling somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. So, yeah, like, it wasn't really – I didn't really have a choice to go down any other path, you know? Like
And that's what gave you the focus to do it and what to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I had to throw all my eggs into the basket. And I remember going for a job interview to be an apprentice Sparky for a big company in Canberra. And I went in and – because after 20s when I got knocked back and I was in limbo. And I'm so glad they told me no.
They knocked you back?
Yeah, they knocked me back. Yeah. And I went in thinking, yeah, they'll give me a job, you know, I'm a likeable enough guy. Like, you know, I'll just, you know, tell them what I'm about and they'll give me the job. And that, for some reason, the manager was, or the boss of the joint was just like, what about rugby? What if we put all these, you know, all these finances into getting you to be a good Sparky, and then you get a contract somewhere. And at the time, I was thinking, I'm not going to get a contract. Like, that's, but if that did happen, then, you know, I'd probably choose rugby because I'm still young, whatever. But I don't think that'll happen. That's what I said to him at the same time. I don't think that'll happen. And then he goes, okay, like, yep, no worries. And then, like, the interview happened however it happened. I can't really remember. But he knocked me back. And that was the best thing to happen because I just picked up uni and did part-time and just did a little bit just to say I'm doing something, you know. And then I was able to put the time into rugby.
Mm.
So, I guess, if it wasn't rugby, maybe I'd do something like that. But, with Pathway, I guess it was meant to be, you know.
Well, it certainly sounds to me like there was obviously a couple of pivotal moments, but there were things that have happened to you that guided you down this path.
Yeah, it's funny how it happens.
Yeah, and, you know, life is about opportunities and chances and all of that. So, but it sounds to me like, you know, rugby really gave you the direction, the purpose, the strength and the drive, which hopefully, you know, when it's all over, as a player, you can take those things that you've learnt and your degree and all of those things and take it into whatever's next.
So I have to start again, right? and this is where it's scary because it's always been rugby.
Yeah.
So it's quite scary.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I've got a degree now in business management, but I still have no idea. Maybe we'll be doing a podcast together, mate.
Mate, firstly, I would love to do that. Secondly, I still don't know what I want to do, mate. You know.
And that's what I've heard from people, which kind of, it kind of gives you a little bit more confidence.
Yeah, it's a scary thought because I got two kids and a mortgage, but
yeah,
you know, I really, you know, I like what I do, but is it what I want to do at it? Don't know.
Well, you're doing all right, mate. So
I appreciate it. This was fun, Connell. Thank you very much for coming and sitting down with me.
I think it's the first time ever with a full kit.
You did well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Till next time.
Till next time.
That's it for this week of the Given Rugby podcast. I'd like to thank everyone for listening or watching. Please don't forget to like us on social media. We're at Given Rugby. We'd also really appreciate a subscribe on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts from. If you really like the show, we'd love a review because that helps permeate the podcast across all of the platforms and will show the podcast to others who like rugby. Finally, don't forget to join the Given Rugby Club, where we're going to be giving away exclusive content, early episodes, access to guests, access to me. So please don't forget to head over to givenrugby.com and sign up for the Given Rugby Club, which is just $5 a month. Finally, thank you to our sponsors, and we look forward to the next episode next week.